And for any of you that were expecting their child, I think he's going to be here tomorrow. So here's the time to leave. Okay, I'm going to talk about, I should use the title that you just said, rather than say an algorithm for finding corona solution. Yeah, maybe we should turn out the first. So, you can leave on the back lights if you want. It's like a sec, that's it. Oh, maybe it doesn't work out. Okay. So what I want to talk about is just a simple kind of proof using control theory that if you have a certain corona input, then how you can actually just get out explicit corona output. And what I have in mind for explicit input are going to be, polynomials. So let me just start out with two polynomials for this talk. Suppose we have polynomials P and Q, and we assume that P has degree N, and that'll be the maximum degree of the two polynomials, and suppose they don't have common zeros on the disk. So what we're interested in doing is to find corona solutions. You're trying to do number one. You're trying to solve PU plus QV is equal to 1 in the disk where U and V are H infinity functions, but since we have polynomials, we'll actually find rational functions. But why this is actually the corona problem is that we're going to keep up with bounds. So we want to do this with bounds. And what we'll see is that we can find rational functions U and V with order less than or equal to N. If you didn't worry about the bound at all, you could certainly do N minus 1 from any of a lot of elementary ways. So let me give you an example. So what I want then are explicit formulas. Given P and Q and epsilon, and what I mean by given P and Q is given the coefficients, to write down solutions in terms of coefficients again. Okay. So let's just recall what happens if you don't worry about bounds. Then to do something algorithmically and computationally, you like to reduce everything to linear algebra where you can do good computations. And if you take polynomials P and Q and you look at if they have any common zeros, you look at the greatest common divisor quant L and divide it out. So now H and K have no common zeros, and you write down the Sylvester matrix and this particular matrix and solve that for the coefficients A's and B's, solve this matrix linear equation, and you get solutions A and B that satisfy AP plus AP over L plus BQ over L is equal to 1. So P, so H and, let's see, so A over L and B over L would be solutions to the algebraic equation. But the problem is doing it, I mean, this is a natural kind of way to do it, but of course you have no idea of what happens with bounds. And just simple examples show you that if you take polynomials that have zeros that are close together but off the disk, and do this the main way of solving this kind of equation, you get solutions that blow up. So in our situation, the problem isn't to find a U and a V that actually make the equation equal to 1. The problem is to actually find a U and a V that are bounded analytic functions that we can keep control of the size of. Okay, so let me remind you of what our starting assumptions are. So we'll just fix a small epsilon. So I guess I should note that in this problem over here, the zeros of the polynomial are 1 and 2, and the other one is 0 and 2 plus epsilon. So they don't have any common zeros. Neither of them actually vanish on the disk, but the zeros outside the disk get close together, and if you just write down the matrix and stuff, you see that it blows up. Okay, so fix an epsilon, and what I mean by inputting polynomials, I'm thinking about just a computer algorithm. So what you know by the polynomial, the coefficients. So we know finite number of pn's, and maybe a lesser number of qn's, and we have epsilon, and then we pick this delta. Let's not really worry too much about this particular delta now, but anyway, there is a delta that depends on epsilon, so let's take this one. And maybe Sergey would like to take a smaller number than 12, but anyway. Okay, so there are just four steps in this algorithm, or actually maybe only three, depending on how you look at it. So the first step is you want to find a stable outer polynomial. So that just means a polynomial that doesn't vanish on the disk, so that it satisfies the Fairies theorem, that s squared is equal to p squared in modulus plus q squared in modulus minus delta squared on the circle. You're just using the Fairies theorem. And the problem is, we all know how to do this, but the first thing is, if you're going to do something computational, you should actually think about what's going on. So let's just think about something for a second. So of course, one possibility is if you could factor the polynomials, if you know the zeros, then you can build the outer function using that. But that's really inefficient. So another thing to notice is, well, if Pn is just any polynomial that's non-zero on the circle, then you can we know how to write out a formula for the outer function. But the problem is, if you look at that formula, it's not clear how to see what the coefficient, even though you know that should be a polynomial, it's not clear to see what the coefficient should be. Okay? So it turns out that computationally the way to do this is to find the coefficient Cn that are just the Fourier coefficients of the reciprocal of Pn, and look at this finite matrix, since this is degree n, and just solve this linear system, and you get the coefficients for the outer function. Okay, so the first step we can do computationally, we can do the Fairies theorem. That is the 12 over epsilon, yeah. The delta will be the same throughout. It's the delta squared should be small, so maybe it should be the reciprocal if I didn't say that on the other one. It's obviously the small one. Right. We're assuming that P and Q are bigger than something. And in fact, in this argument, the argument will just show you sort of what the biggest delta is in the abstract, not with explicitly. Okay, so think of delta as being something small. And we actually know that P of Z plus Q of Z in modulus on the entire disk is bigger than delta. But for this part, we're just using the circle. Okay, so that's the first step. And the second step is you just form this n by n matrix. So you get the matrix from taking the coefficients of the coefficients of F from the Fairies theorem. And then we had the coefficients from P and Q, and we just formed this matrix. So it sort of looks, well, except for the direction they go in, it looks a little bit like triplets times coanalytic triplets. If you form this n by n matrix, okay, then we can factor the matrix since it's positive. By the way, I don't have a delta in the formula for R, but R always depends on the delta because you get the F from putting the delta out there and doing this. But the smallest R for which that's positive, the biggest delta for which you can make this non-negative in the limit will tell you the R that's sort of the optimal one. Okay, so you factor R into lower and upper triangular, an LDU decomposition, and then we're just going to call the columns. So this is an n by n matrix. We'll call the columns C1 star to Cn star, the columns of L star. Okay, so we'll build things out of L star. Okay, so we use the Fairies theorem. We just write down this matrix. And then we using that decomposition, so the C's are the columns. The C's are the columns of. C stars are the columns of L star, and then the P's and Q's are the coefficients of the polynomials P and Q. So we form the matrices X star and Y star, and you notice that X star is an N plus 2 by N plus 1 matrix. Okay. But notice that the rank of X star is N plus 1. Because the L with the R that we had is invertible. We're picking a delta so that it's invertible. So L has full rank. So the C's have full rank. And then P0 and Q0 can't both vanish by the coronic condition on the inside of the disk. So it has rank N plus 1. So if you look at XX star, that will be invertible. Okay, so then you just form the matrix Y star XX star inverse X. So you compute that. And then we just, that's an N plus 2 by N plus 2 matrix, and then you just view it as broken up in this operator kind of way, 2 by 2 way of breaking it up. Okay? So we noticed that D star is a 2 by 2 matrix. So we're only going to need the bottom row of D. So that's what this 0, 1 represents. So you just form this, you form this 2 by 2 matrix, D star plus Z bar, B star, 1 minus Z bar, A star inverse D star, the transfer function for the matrix. And that's a 2 by 2 matrix. Hit it with 0, 1, that's just two numbers. Divide it by delta, and those are the functions U star and V star that satisfy the corona conditions and gives us the right estimate. And also notice that, what about the order? Well, A is an N by N matrix. So if you look at 1 minus Z bar A star N, well, first of all, yeah, the matrix, I guess I should have mentioned this. Let me put this so we still have it up there. The matrix Y star XX star inverse X is actually a partial isometry. You can just check. If you multiply it by its adjoint, you get it back again. I'm sorry. You multiply it by its adjoint, then by itself again, you get it back again. It's a partial isometry. So it's a contraction. So that means A, B, C, and D are all contractions. So they have norm less than 1. And okay, so if you look at Z inside the unit disk times A, that will have norm less than 1. So the identity minus Z bar A star inverse will always exist for all Z's inside the disk. Okay, so since A is an N by N, the identity minus Z bar A star inverse, minus Z bar A star inverse, when you compute it, if you think about the determinant formula, so you would have a matrix divided by the determinant. The determinant will be a polynomial of degree n. So that's where the rational function of degree n is going to come in from the denominator and the determinant, if you think of it like that. Okay, but you don't actually have to compute you can compute the inverse using any technique you want, but you, thinking about determinants tells you what the degree is going to be. So this will be a order at most n for the rational function. Well, I'm just telling you get it right now. We'll talk about why in just a minute. Okay. So first of all, let me give you a simple example. And this has to be really simple since I can't get any student to do the programming for me. I just have to do them by hand. So by hand, I'm going to use degree one. So here's an example. So take a polynomial P and Q. P is 1 minus Z and Q is Z. And we're trying to find U and V to solve that. And if you think about it for just a second, you can see that U and V equal to 1 solves this. Okay. So the question is, what does this algorithm tell me? How do I get that? Okay. So we assume, of course, 1 minus Z and Z don't have a common 0. So let's just, so it's bounded below by some number delta squared. Okay, so we don't know where delta squared is. We don't have to know what it is yet, but there's just something that works there. Okay, so then step one, we're supposed to use the Fairies theorem. So this time we can do it by hand because it's just a quadratic. So you do it by hand, and to get an outer function, you want F0 to be bigger than F1. So what you get is, you have to solve those two equations. I wouldn't even write out, we're not even going to solve them, but this is what you have to do. You have to solve those two equations to get F0 and F1. Okay. Okay, so step two, we write down this R, which in this case, R was n by n, so R is just going to be a number. It's a 1 by 1. And when you write that down, what you get is that F0 squared minus 2 needs to be bigger than or equal to 0. That's the only condition. So a little bit later, we'll see that we can let F0 squared come down to 2, and that will be the optimal solution. But anyway, so F0 squared minus 2 needs to be positive. So then we factor it LL star. That just means we take the square root of this positive number. So that would be F0 squared minus 2. And then we form X star and Y star. So that's forming X star and Y star. And then we compute A star, C star, B star, D star. So this is what we get. Okay, so you basically get it's an n by 2 by n by 2, so this is a 3 by 3 matrix. Okay, so in step 4, so we take the matrix and we just write down what the solution is. So if you do that in this case, this is what you've got. Okay, so there are a lot of solutions. Now, so we get a lot of solutions, and we noticed what we expected to get was we expected to get solutions of order 1. Of course, this is still not showing they have the right estimate yet, but we'll worry about that a little bit later. But you just write that down, that's the solution. And then what we needed to know about F0 was that it needed to be bigger than or equal to 2. So if you send F0 down to 2, you get 1, 1. Okay, you get the optimal solution. Okay, so then the next thing I want to do is make a few remarks about this, and then we'll say something about the proof. So just to illustrate for this talk today, I mean, there's no problem with using more than two polynomials for input data. Okay, and then as I said, the main thing for finding the best delta is just to have this matrix R be bigger than or equal to 0. Okay, then another thing to notice is that you can do the same thing with rational functions, and in particular finite Blaschke products. This argument will work. And for finite Blaschke products, of course, the Riesz part is trivial, though. Okay, and, well, I'm thinking of this as a real algorithm to produce things. So when you think about an algorithm, you're going to make mistakes. And to start this off, doing the fair Riesz factorization, you have to compute the CJs, for example, and so there's going to be some error going on. Okay, so but we're trying to solve this problem exactly equal to 1, right? So it turns out if you want to take care of the error part, you have to be a little more careful, and you can do it as long as you now allow your rational functions to go up to degree 3n. Okay, so then you can take care of the error part. So it's a robust algorithm, and well, just by brute force methods, of course, you can take care of rational matrix functions. But the matrix part here, this algorithm fails for that. In the sense of getting good estimates, you're back to determinants again. So you're growing like the worst order known for determinant kind of thing. Okay, so what you'd like to have in this kind of stuff is actually a nice algorithm for matrix-valued Corona theorem kind of problem, with rational function entries. But the matrix problem, this algorithm I'm going to talk about does not give you good estimates for that. Or no, well, we'll sort of see why later. Okay, so let's say just a word about the proof. So why does the algorithm work? Well, first of all, we're going to need to have the H2 Corona theorem. So that means that we actually need to solve a Corona theorem, but instead of trying to solve for 1, we've got to solve for any H2 function. That sounds worse. But instead of finding bounded analytic functions for input, we get to use H2 functions for input. So we want to solve PU plus QV is equal to H, but V and U can be an H2 instead of O infinite. This is a lot easier problem. And actually, you could of course use the real Corona theorem to justify the algorithm, but this part only uses the Riesz representation theorem, Cauchy, Schwarz, and Green's theorem. So it seems fundamentally easier. You don't have to use any knowledge of H1 factorization or anything like that. Okay? So that gives you a justification that there should be some delta that would work in the problem. Okay, so then the next thing is that this really important lemma, I think, of Nash-Fourier's that had previously been used by Ball and I and by Agler and McCarthy and other people. I mean, this is very elementary, and I'll give you complete proof of this. But what this basically says is, for problems in one variable, that where you hope the solution is going to be a bounded analytic function, that you should be able to set it up as some problem with isometry. Okay, so what it actually says is you take a matrix ABCD you take an operator D that's a contraction and you block it off any way you want, but A should be square. The spaces don't even have to be the same for the input of B and the output of C. Okay, but at least A has to act in the same space, square. Okay, then you just form the function. Phi of z defined by d plus zz identity minus z a bar b, the transfer function for this operator, and at each z less than 1, that will be that function acting on the space of a will be a contraction. Okay, and here's the proof. Because the operator has norm less than or equal to 1, then you just apply it to the appropriate vector and see what you get. So the vector that you apply it to is z times 1 minus z a inverse bz and h. So you apply it to that, then you write out what you get, and so right now this first part right here is just using the fact that we multiplied it out and we recognized, we set this up so that when d hits h and c hits this other thing, that is phi. Okay, so that's phi, and then the leftover part is this identity minus z a inverse. But since we know this operator is a contraction, it has to be less than or equal to the vector we started with, so it has to be less than or equal to the norm of h squared and the norm of that part on the top. But notice that the part on the top has this extra z in it, right here, so this term is less than this one. So it's a contraction. So that's it. This by itself doesn't tell you what I said before, but if you start with any contraction, you turn it into a turbulence problem and turn it into a problem of finding isometries, you can easily see that they're equivalent. Okay. Okay, so then the next thing, we're still in step two. So first telling you if you had some kind of matrix like that, how you build. Maybe that should have been the last. Anyway, how you can build a contraction. But then the problem is, how do we get finiteness out of this, and why is R finite and positive? So remember, our condition is that the Toeplitz operator is bounded below. That is the H2 Corona theorem, that you have that operator, TP, TP star plus TQ, TQ star minus delta squared is bounded below. Okay, then what we did was we used the Fayer-Riesz theorem. We found a function, an analytic function with no zero, so F squared is equal to P squared plus Q squared minus delta squared. So if you use F, if you turn the Toeplitz operators around in the other direction, so you look at TP star TP plus TQ star TQ minus delta squared, that is TF star TF. Okay. But we turn them around the other way, so we have to subtract that back out again. So what we get then are the terms TP star TP minus TP TP star, the commutators. So the positive thing we start with can be written as TF star TF minus these two commutators. Okay, and we notice that F was invertible, so you pull the F out and you get this line right here, okay, and we can cancel out the F, so that's equivalent to this line. And then the problem is, what we need to know is, we don't want just the identity is bigger than that. We just need to have that if you project under n dimensions, the finite dimensional subspace of a natural basis from 1 to zn minus 1, that will be positive. But if you compute tp star tp plus t2 star t2, that actually lives on just 1 to zn n minus 1. It lives on 1 to zn minus 1. It's just, the rest of the matrix are all zeros. It just lives in that finite dimensional space. And that space is invariant for the adjoint of the shift, and tf star inverse is a function of the adjoint of the shift, so all of that is invariant for tf star inverse. So that tells you that, of course, this whole thing is positive actually on Pn. Okay. So now you hit it with tf star tf on both sides again, and if we, what are the matrix R winds up being the quantity tf star Pn tf minus the two commutators. Okay. So we conclude by saying that the what we started with, we break it up as R, and then this leftover part is TF star PN per TF. Okay. Now if you were doing some kind of matrix problem, then you'd already have a problem here because you wouldn't be on finite dimension anymore. So this is where we, okay, so we've shown that TP TP star plus TQ TQ star minus delta squared is R plus TF star PM perp TF. But now what you notice is that if you just actually look at the computation for this, the matrix TF star PM perp TF is just TF twiddle star, where F twiddle is writing the coefficients the other way. There's a name for this polynomial, but I forgot what it is, where you factor out the Zn and go back the other way. It comes up in autocorrelation kinds of problems. But so now we have that we can write, well, we know that R is positive. We know that this positive operator can be written as R, TF, TF star perp. So I guess I'll leave that one and just come over here. Okay, so how do you go from here to here? You just apply reproducing kernels to both sides. So the reproducing kernel hits T KZ, 1 over 1 minus Z W bar, let's say, would hit TP star, would hit that and just give you the P of W bar times the reproducing kernel again. And so from that you turn the statements about operators into statements about functions times the reproducing kernel. But then I multiply through by the reproducing kernel, and here it is on this side. And here is R applied to the reproducing kernel, inner product of the reproducing kernel. And then we remember we factored R as LL star. So what we get is a statement, a quadratic statement. You have two sides, you put all the squares on each side. So it's a typical Hilbert space kind of argument of the most fundamental kind. You have squares on both sides. So then that tells you an isometry statement. You view this as certain inner products. Both sides as inner products, and that gives you an isometry statement. So the isometry statement here is that, so let's look at this one again. If you just pull off the left-hand side, I guess, so L star KW, whatever space that's in, and then a delta just being a complex number, and then F twiddle being a complex number, think of the vectors that look like that. This is saying the inner product of those two kind of vectors is the other side over here. Okay, so I'm just about through here. Okay, so anyway, so that gives us that we have that this vector inner product with itself is this vector inner product with itself. So there's an explicit partial isometry that takes these vectors to these, and it turns out to be this matrix. Okay, so then that's why that condition works. So let me just end this by saying that this argument can be modified a little bit to give the following thing that I think is sort of curious and that might be a little more interesting. So not only can you find these polynomials, I'm sorry, these rational functions of order less than or equal to n that solve the corona conclusion and you keep up with a bound, but you can actually do it so that it's an inner function on the boundary. Okay. So you can assume that u squared plus v squared and on the boundary of the circle is just constant. I'm sorry, it's a constant times an inner function. So that suggests then that they're probably, I don't know if it's unique in the case where it's actually inner, but it suggests that there ought to be another technique to just to do some kind of optimal kind of thing to find, once you know that there's a function that, it's some kind of extremal problem, because there's a sort of an extremal function that does this. So then there ought to be maybe some way directly to start out with an extremal function. Okay, that's what I wanted to talk about. That's correct. But you can do the same problem with rational inner functions, like if you were in higher dimensions or something. But you can use rational inner functions, so that's not a problem. They're just constant. There's other parts of the argument that don't work. But the theorist part doesn't give you a... But there's another complication. Okay.
Then
we
need to extend the H and P Japanese problem, and then we got kind of...
Well...
You would tell Japanese already it's easier to have the H by intelligence.
To do, yeah. I'm not sure the question is.
Set up
the
solution of the Carona problem. What you can do is you find one solution and then you
Yeah.
And the engineers have a whole library using MATLAB, so this kind of standard sound that is already done by engineers.
I don't know how this compares to doing that. Yeah, I don't know what the solutions that I'm producing here. I mean, these are optimal solutions, so it must be the same. Right, as long as R is positive, right? You don't know when R... Actually, doing the problem to be sure that R is... Yeah, you don't know. I mean, you have to actually... I'll talk to you about it later.
Okay. It's optimal for given delta, yeah?
Right.
It's optimal for given delta.
Right, but it tells you how to find the best delta. You keep that matrix positive.
Yeah.
But, I can talk to you about it.
Let's make the speaker clear.